Yeah, good evening and welcome to the ASPIRA of Delaware Charter Operations Board meeting for the month of September. We'll like to move into executive session work on couple items around strategy and growth, and then we'll return to the public session at 6 o'clock. Do I have a motion to move to executive session?
Motion to move to executive session, Santiago.
Do I have a second?
Second, Chairman Thistle.
Thank you, Guillermina. All those in favor? Aye, no opposition. Okay, we'll go ahead and move to executive session. As I said, we'll schedule to come back to public session at 6 o'clock. Great, so once again, welcome to ASPIRA of Delaware Charter Operation. We're back to the public session. I do need a motion to move out of executive session into the public session. Do I have a motion?
Yes, motion to support the building committee to negotiate on behalf of the board of ASPIRA. Is that okay?
Well, and I think
Well, first,
I'll make a motion to move into public session.
Yes, sorry about that.
So
it was second. All those in favor? Aye. So let's now there was some strategic discussion during the executive session, and we'd like to, as we know, we've been working on the growth of ASPIRA Academy for the high school. So we'd like to entertain a motion to continue on the strategy for that growth. So Guillermina, please.
Yes, a motion to support the building committee to negotiate on behalf of the board and do whatever is necessary to accomplish the objective.
Do I have a second?
Second, Dow.
Thank you, Rosalie. All those in favor? Any objection? Thank you. So very quickly on the agenda, we'll move to the, actually before that, any public comment? No? Okay, so we'll quickly go through approval of the meeting agenda as well as the meeting minutes from our August meeting. We'll do we didn't have time to do the head of school evaluation, so we'll come back to executive session for that. We have the discussion. So finance, we'll hear from the financial reports, and then the committee reports, operation, development, D&I, and we'll close the meeting with the head of school report or the CEO report. We do have to vote on the COVID policy. So Margie, that will also be part of your report. Meeting minutes. Any
Alberta,
comments or updates?
I don't have the minutes. So Alberta, do you have them?
I can send them real quick.
Or you can share a screen. I gave you permission, but I do need them.
I don't have them on this computer here. I have them on a separate computer, so. Let me see if I can pull them out real quick. Greg, I just emailed them to you.
bear with me. Okay, I got him. Can you see him?
Yes. Any comments or questions to the meeting minutes? Do you have a motion to approve the agenda and meeting minutes as presented?
Motion to approve agenda and meeting minutes.
Do I have a second?
Second, Rolando Dow.
Thank you. All those in favor? Any opposition? Okay, so meeting minutes approved. Let's go ahead and move to the financial report.
Can you see it? All right, so we're going to talk about August. And that puts us 2 months through a year, or 17% for the fiscal year. And as always, we always start with revenue. Not a whole lot of change. Subtotal for state, our budget's almost $12 million. We're at 8.9 or 75%. For the local, again, not a whole lot of movement here. About $7 million is our budget. We're at $105,000 with just 2%. And then federal, no change at all. The budget's $1.4 million or 0%. And again, this is typical with the way we always start the beginning of the year. So all in right now, our budget's a little over $20 million, and we have about $9 million or 44%. As I always do, I'll get into the expense detail, but again, we're at 17%. Our budget for expenses is a little over $20 million, about 20.3, and we're at 4.9 million or 24%. You'll see over here the variance, which is typical every year, which I show right down here, because we pay our annual debt service in July, the first month of the fiscal year. We spent $1.43 million in August. So as you can see, we front load a lot of expenses in the beginning of the year, but we definitely reduced drastically between July and August. Not a whole lot to talk about on this line graph. We'll keep a close eye once we get a couple more months into the year. But as we always trend, we start with the red line above the blue line, and then we come down below by the end of the year. As far as our local funding update, no money yet. We didn't get any local school district funding yet, but we will get locked in after September 30th. And then we'll start with our 35% preload and then have the rest of it hopefully by December, if not December, January. As far as our cash position, this includes all the expended funds, all our year-to-date funding, which included last year's carryover. Right now, total revenue to date is about $14 million. We've spent, as I said, $4.9 million. $42,000 in encumbered funds, which I'll talk about in our expense detail. And that is our remaining, about $9 million. I did update this. Hope I got this one right, Lourdes, but I updated our grants tab. Lourdes and Len worked hard and they did apply for three grants. Lourdes, just verify my amounts. $40,000 for Chichester. Then the Marvin family was $5,000. And then Elise and Rosa McDonald, that was $250,000. Is that accurate? Okay, for the expense detail, it's always the same format. Total salaries in our fiscal year 22 budget for salaries is $8.7 million. Right now we're at $1.6 million, or 18%. And again, the target for expenditures is 17% or less. I mentioned it in July, well, actually in the August meeting, but July was a three payroll month. You have two of those a year. For total other employment costs or OECs, $4.8 million is a budget. We're at $777,000, or 16%. Total travel, which the big ticket is really the student transportation, $1.4 million is our budget. We're $131,000, or 9%. Total contracted services, our budget is $2.3 million. We're at $792,000, or 35%. And again, I put all the comments, I always put the comments as to why we're over in each line over the actual threshold, or 25%, which would be a variance. So they're included. Total supplies and materials, the budget's a little over $1 million. This is where we have our encumbered funds. That's basically committed expenditures for basically instructional supplies and athletic supplies. If we count all those, we've spent $331,000, or we're at 31% of budget. For total capital outlay equipment, $35,000 is our budget. We've not spent a whole lot there, $2,700. Or 8%. And the big bucket here, total capital outlay property, which includes our debt service budget's almost $2 million, $1.9 million, and we've spent $1.36 million, or 71%. So again, our all categories combined for fiscal year 22, our budget's $20.23 million for the year. With the encumbered funds of $42,000 included, $4.9 million is where we're at year to date, or 25%. And again, it's very typical for school year, the start of school year. We always trend higher in the beginning, and we will decrease as we get through the middle of the year, and then obviously get that red line below the blue line and line graph by May and June. Any questions on any tab in this report?
Greg, do you want to speak a little bit about the local funds?
Yeah, sure. So
I guess maybe from the perspective of you in the preliminary budget that we talked about, I guess a month ago now, you know, you have sort of predicted that there were going to be some changes on the per pupil type of things, but the considerations that you made were such that very much aligned to ultimately, you know, what happened with all the things that are going on at the DOE level. So we still, even though we have a penalty and the funding that we're receiving, we should still be in pretty good shape from a budget, overall total budget perspective.
Yes, and I know Margie explained a lot last board meeting, but so our local funding got reduced drastically. It's not something that we can control. So the tough part for our local funding and projecting it, our local funding, our revenue is based on school districts' expenses. While there is a little bit of a change in the way it was reported this year, and unfortunately DOE allowed it to happen, and it's in Delaware code, so we couldn't do a whole lot about it, but we anticipated a substantial hit. So I always budget on a flat level, meaning I tend to use last year's level for state and local funding and just take it out this year without giving any type of increase. But knowing that even with the ESSER funding, how local expenditures could be moved around a bit from the district side, and also knowing that, you know, we are comprised of, I think it's about six districts now. Really the big ones are Christina, which is at least 60% of our local or our students come from Christina School District, then Red Clay and Colonial are the next largest. And then we have, just a few students from Brandywine, Smyrna, even Cesar Rodman. But taking all that in mind and knowing that we probably wouldn't get hit with all the school districts, I anticipated about $400 per student, and it ended up being $432. So the projection was pretty much dead on. And the nice thing is we budget on 100% of our enrollment, and we're going to exceed our 100% enrollment. So we're actually, even though it doesn't make us happy, because we're losing revenue that should be following the students, that just isn't following the students. So it's unfair, but at least we're going to actually come in higher than I projected with the local funding. So now it kind of rambled, Lourdes. Does that help?
Well, yeah, very helpful. But I think the point that I want the group to make sure they take away is that, you know, Greg takes a very conservative approach to it. And I think, you know, not just knowing that, but also always trying to anticipate and level set on expectations, right? So I think that is really the point that I think, because again, none of this we can control, but, you know, part of, you know, Greg's process and his ability to manage to a more conservative approach is something that is a practice that the school continues to have. And so kudos to Greg for really just level setting, like this was coming down. We built it in, and you know what? It was good that we built it in because we were pretty close to what we thought the impact was, you know. And if it's good news, you know, we'll take the increase in students of over 100%. But I think more importantly to the group, you know, this is the way Greg really manages the budget and trying to be conservative and anticipate the things as they before they come. So,
thank you, Lewis.
I very much appreciate. Very much appreciated, but and I love a saying that Margie uses all the time and keep reminding her, we don't spend the money we don't have. So in this case, we wanted to be on the forefront of, we might not even get it, and we certainly didn't get it, so we certainly needed to accommodate to that. But go ahead, Margie.
No, I want to be sure, since this is on public record, that the fact that Greg does such a great job of anticipating sort of that worst case scenario does not make that shortfall any more fair, right? So it's still not fair. And as taxpayers and residents of the state, we should not be okay with any type of shortfall like that when it's detrimental to children. So there's a flaw in our school funding model, and this is a perfect example of how flawed it is. So just, I want to be sure that anybody who's listening to this recording doesn't get the impression that just because we planned well, that we don't need that money, and that it's not, and that it's only fair that we get that money because we have the students to account for that money.
Amen.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, that's part of the reason I wanted us to talk a little bit more, just for the understanding that there could have been a potential impact. Luckily, at this moment, we didn't. But to your point, Margie, doesn't necessarily mean that we cannot use the fund to better serve our students. So we're certainly just managing at this moment. So, but I mean, I do want to recognize, kudos to Greg to help us anticipate and to help us be real I guess, manage the reality that we were confronted with as it pertains to the local funding.
Thank you. And I'll just add that to wrap it all up so everyone really understands the impact, which is devastating, it's almost $600,000. And if that doesn't make you sick to your stomach, you know, I know it does. And it just, that's the pain that it just isn't right. So.
Anything else from our financial? So I would like to motion to approve the financial report as presented.
Motion to move to accept the financials as presented, Santiago.
Do I have a second?
Second, Gonzalez.
Yep. Thank you. All those in favor? Aye.
Actually, there is one more item. Greg, can we share the preliminary, some of the preliminary audit results? Do we want to share it? Let me pause and ask that question.
We could. I wasn't prepared because it's not official yet, but I did share the news with, I know Lourdes and Margie and you, but I can say with almost certainty because it's not published yet, but we had a probably our best year ever financially. And we will easily meet our bond covenants, which is most critical, especially considering the stance that we may take further down the road with possibly more bond financing. So we had a great year. We're going to meet our debt, you know, our debt covenants, which is critical. But we had, off the top of my head, we carried over almost $3 million in cash, which is great. So.
Will the auditor get me ready to?
Pardon me, Lourdes.
Yeah. Okay. So we will have the auditors come and join us at the next board meeting.
Yeah, it'll be out this by the end of this month. Yeah.
Okay. Anything else? Greg, do you mind moving the agenda up, please? Anything from the operations?
Well, I'll just say operationally, I'll talk about the start of school year. So, we're 3 weeks margin in school, hard to believe already with the students here. And we've got on-site testing. I don't know what Margie has in her head of school report, so I try not to steal her thunder, but we've got on-site COVID testing going on at both buildings. It's logistically a lot of work, but I just give this whole team kudos. Because it's mandatory at our school. I think we're the only one in Delaware that's doing it mandatory, making it mandatory. But, you know, at the end of the day, if we get towards the end of the year and we say we did not have a school shutdown, knock on wood, then I would say we made a great decision. That's the goal here. We got all the kids coming to school, which a lot, you know, we've been basically a year and a half without having a whole that many school and or that many students in the building. But, our arrivals, we've got split bell times where we have middle school schedules here at the East Campus and elementary. We've worked through those challenges. We've worked through, again, but there's a bus driver shortage in the whole nation. Delaware is not alone. That whole bus company, it's family owned and every one of those family members are driving buses every day. So it's a total commitment in so many different people, but from an operation standpoint, logistically, things are going well. It's hectic. We're putting a lot of time in, but the kids are here. They're getting an education, a great education here. They're happy to be here. They all get free meals, which is awesome. That's breakfast and lunch. We also have aftercare going on. So they get a meal for aftercare. Sports are going on. So we're trying to get it back as close to normal as we ever were. But I think we're hitting it on all cylinders. And again, I hope I didn't steal any of Margie's thunder, but I'm so, I told her I'm so proud to be a part of this team because the work that the teachers do and it's, you know, everyone that is a stakeholder in the school from a team standpoint, every role is so critical. And that's what I love. And you know, my team is not a bunch of teachers, right? We do the operations, the transportation, the finance and all that, but it's a total commitment from everybody. I walked in this morning at 6 o'clock and I've got two facilities worker in there building more PPE dividers. It's amazing. And it brings tears in my eyes, to be honest with you, because there's still such a commitment to keep these kids in school. And I think it starts from top down. I think Margie's a great leader, but it's total buy-in. It's a big commitment. So I'm going to stop now, Margie. But things are going well.
Excellent. Thank you for that update. And I have had the opportunity to be at the school and actually both buildings now in several locations. And I remember just kind of walking on the hallways, and the teachers were just thanking and being grateful and excited. But yes, also with that challenge, particularly for the leader ones, because typically I kind of keep myself on the front and around the kindergarten hallway. And those children had never been to school before necessarily. So it's certainly a challenge for the little ones. But everybody with smiles, I'm happy to be there. Development, Marisa.
Hi, sorry, I'm working on two different computers. So the development committee met yesterday. And just as an update on the expansion campaign, Lynn and Lourdes were able to get Tony Allen, who's the president of DSU and was recently appointed to the Historic Black Colleges and Universities Committee by President Biden to serve as the honorary chair of the expansion campaign. So that was wonderful. Tony Bariglio took a tour of the high school and has agreed to serve on the advisory committee, has written a check for towards the expansion campaign, and has made a commitment to make additional future contributions to the campaign. Dennis O'Brien recently took a tour of the high school, is pledging to make a donation, and is willing to serve on the advisory committee as well. And then BB Coker is the fourth person who is going to be touring the school in the upcoming weeks and may potentially serve on the advisory committee for the expansion campaign. The expansion campaign is looking for additional people to serve on the advisory committee and participate in the campaign. So if you have any recommendations, please pass those along to me and then I will get them to Lynn. And Greg touched on this in his presentation, but grants were submitted on behalf of the school, and you know, we're waiting to hear back on that. And a few additional four grants were submitted, and a few additional ones will be submitted in the coming months. As for the school events, I don't know if everybody received my cancellation of the Hispanic Heritage Celebration, which was supposed to be tomorrow. That was canceled due to COVID concerns. Lynn did mention that all of the vendors were very understanding of the situation, and hopefully next year we will be able to do it. There are two winter concerts that are planned, that are currently still planned. On December 14th, the elementary school will have one at 6:30. And on December 16th, the middle school, high school will have one at 7 p.m. Stay tuned for more information on that. The goal is to have as many board members present at these types of events as possible. Given COVID and everything that's going on, there may be a limit to the number of people who are able to attend these. And for me, my personal self, I really would prefer not to take a seat away from a parent who has a child in one of those concerts. So it probably, unless you're a board member with a child that's going to be in it, probably won't be asked to attend. But stay tuned, because who knows what could happen in the next couple of months, or you know what the restrictions are going to be. With the vaccines rolling out for kids, maybe things are going to change drastically. Although. Probably not. As for strategic planning, following our board retreat, there was one goal and two objectives that were assigned to the development committee. So the goal that our objectives relate to are all students are equipped to function bilingually in society. And then our two objectives were create three initiatives to enhance the immersion experience for students by increasing the exposure to the target language. And then objective two is create a parent caregiver support framework around biliteracy multi-language. So as an update, the development committee is going to work on the three initiatives on the first objective. And we hope to have a report to the board. Our deadline to complete that is June 1st, 2022. So we hope to have a report to the board at the March or the April meeting, so that the board has a little bit of time to digest the three initiatives and give us some feedback. So then we can meet our June 1st deadline of having those three initiatives. And then, you know, we can, you know, work on potentially implementing them. And then for objective two, Lynn is going to provide the information for the Family Resource Center to see what's already in place. And then the development committee is going to discuss further, like, you know, this is what's in place. What else can we do? I know that the sort of specific idea around that was discussed at our retreat relates to having like a sort of like a phone chain where you have parents that are, you know, like English speaking parents and Spanish speaking parents, you know, so they have the ability to help each other, you know, with homework, like in the evening or something like that. So, you know, we want to, before we start going down a rabbit hole, we want to see what's already in place and then come up with a plan that we can present to the board, you know, for their thoughts and their feedback. And that was all I had. Does anybody have any questions? Okay, bye.
Thank you, Marisa. Deanna, Anna, I think that you're presenting for Rebecca, which was not available to join us today.
I'm sorry. I was going to say only one question for Marisa. So with all the activity happening in this expansion campaign, is there a way, because I know Greg keeps track of the grants in those pieces, and we talk about how all those pieces work together, right? If we get a grant, we can take operational funds and transfer it over to the campaign, blah, blah, blah. Is there a way that we're tracking how we're doing on the actual the campaign? Do we have a formal way that we're tracking that?
I'll defer to Lourdes on this because she's so much more involved with the expansion campaign.
Okay. Because I'm just trying to, because I know what we've gotten in terms of an estimation around what we think the market will give us. But I'm just kind of curious on how are we tracking that, right? Because that's something I would want to pay attention to. And we had a mechanism. I don't know if we're still using that same mechanism or not, or if we've changed or we've come back.
Combined it all.
So Lourdes, I mean, we developed a spreadsheet. Go ahead. No, I'm sorry. I was going to say, so Luis, the same mechanism that we had started with, there's a spreadsheet. Yeah. So, and I know Lourdes follows up. I think Lourdes and Lynn, it's, I have a letter from Lourdes that goes out to those that donate or give us, donations.
Yeah. Well, and maybe we can have an offline conversation like that, just to make sure that we're tracking, because some of the individual stuff, at least I don't see. And so that's the part that I kind of go, where is that in the, Greg, in the sheet that you have that we've got the much larger numbers, yeah. I would presume, but that's kind of where the disconnect was for me.
Understood.
Yep. Cool.
Yeah, and so it, a good point. So I will coordinate with Lynn. Maybe the four of us can get together and make sure that we align on how we see it, because we are now starting to see the benefit or having recruit a CAM. So obviously a lot of the grants have just been submitted because the due dates were September 1st. We're now on the second wave, which is the due date is October 1st. And there's still some, one more that would be by the end of the year. And then the last cycle then is not until the spring of 2022. In addition to that, we have then had gone back to start reaching to the individuals that committed to make donations. So we have had two conversations already, and we'll have the third one next week. And those checks are already coming in. So out of the feasibility study, CAM gave us direction and a potential target. So we prepare, you know, a spreadsheet with line item by line item of all the possibilities. So now we're working against that to see how much of what he identified ultimately we get. But we're just managing with, you know, Excel spreadsheet. Okay, so Anna.
Okay. Very, a couple of things Rebecca wanted me to go over with. Just a review of the activity, they met on September 13th. I was unable to join them that day, and I did apologize for that. But the next meeting for the DEI would be on October 12th. They wanted to acknowledge that the decision to read stamped collectively and to check in with Margie, who said she had copies for all of the board members. And maybe we can figure out a plan next time on when to read it and for discussions. So we can do this with our students. Rebecca wanted to remind everyone if you had come up with any personal DEI goals for setting ourselves for this year as examples. For example, she gave one of her goals is that she wants to plan for more than 75% of her authors or artists that she uses in her Spanish classroom to be women and or people of color. So that's a personal DEI goal for her. And she wanted us also as a board to come up with some of our own personal ones. And then we did want to seek approval. I spoke with Rebecca today and with Renee with our DEI, well, with our equity statement. I'm gonna put it on our chat out.
Anna, you're on mute.
This entire time I was on mute. I am so sorry, and I'm going through everything so quickly.
Just at the end, Anna, just at the end. When you put the thing in chat, somehow you mute yourself.
Okay, good. So it's just on chat. So I'll read it quickly just so people can read. It says, we commit to identify and dismantle systemic inequalities within education that contribute to opportunity gaps for our students. We do this by creating a culture and of caring and embraces all the identities of our school community members and provides a sense of belonging for all. So Rebecca had asked for revisions and your input on this and going back and forth. Speaking with Rebecca and Renee today through emails, we feel that this is Margie's input also, this Margie, it's very concise and it's to the point and clear. So that would be what we're asking for the board to approve. And that would be it for DEI. Any questions on that?
This will be a school-wide. I mean, this is meant to be the school DNI statement.
Yes. If you wanted, I mean, we wanted approval. If there's further alterations, I mean, that's open too. So it's up to you. If you wanted to, we can email it maybe and then approve it next month. But it's gone through quite a little bit of editing already.
Yeah, I would support probably sending it out because I'm reading it now and like there's probably some words I would take out to probably make it concise, not change the meaning. Because I think the work that you guys have gotten to, absolutely, it seems like we've gotten to what we're for sure. I think from the first version to where we are now, definitely. Feels like we're definitely in the right direction, no doubt. Great job. I don't know if anyone else would want to have an input on this, but it definitely feels like it's definitely turning in the right direction. For me, I would just look at it to see what words could I take out to wouldn't change the meaning, but just make it more concise. That's honestly the review that I would do.
Okay. So we'll send it out again then, because I also told Rebecca that we could spend a whole year to make it perfect. Okay.
Agree.
You know, it's like I'm going.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that I do like the angle that the statement took. I had concern about, you know, finding all those descriptors, and no matter how careful we are, we're always going to miss something. So I'd much rather not do it. So I think that you just use words to to be encompassed, and I think I like them. I like it much better. So kudos to the team, and thank you everybody for actively participating and providing feedback. Because obviously we're ending up with a stronger statement and more meaningful.
Okay, so we'll send this out then email. Just let's hope by like on October we can approve it. Then would that be the good way of moving forward?
Yep.
Okay. And then one last thing, I didn't want to. I want to take 1 minute for the PTO update, really, really quick. It's not on the agenda, but I went to the meeting and it was actually very, very positive. We had over 25 people in person attending with school representation from Jose and with Wanda and Ernie. And we had over 60 participants online. So it was very positive, high energy. We even had everything set up for tomorrow for our PTO table. We had all the volunteers ready. Unfortunately, it was canceled, but at least the support, I mean, it really seems that I'm like, okay. So it was really, really positive. Thank you.
Excellent. Great to hear. And I'm still very, very open and available to have a meeting with the president. So if you can help me make the connection, I certainly will welcome that opportunity, and glad to see that they're reconstituting the organization, because I think PTO has always been important to Aspira, and they've been always very supportive. They've been supportive of the school agenda. So
yeah, and
to hear that level of participation.
Yeah, and we're going to do board elections on the 13th. So people were signing up. I saw that. So, and I've been speaking with Mike. I see him at the pickup line at Car Rider. So it's going really well. This in-person makes such a difference. So I will do, Will Lourdes. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that. Going back to your DNI report, though, I mean, I think that we have alignment to read the book stamp. The school does have copies for that. So, you know, Margie, Greg, if you can get, I guess, Magda or, one of the ladies to go ahead and mail the books. And
we'll be mailed in the mail.
I think it would be better. Perfect. Once we get it in our hands, I think it's better to make decisions. And we certainly can commit to during executive session, dedicate a 15, 20 minute kind of quick discussion, one chapter at a time. I don't know how big or long the book is, but I'm sure we can make those kind of commitments for our own. And that becomes the first sort of the D&I goal for each of us. And then we can explore, what else can we get involved with? And I mean, for some of you is participation on the committee, and maybe that is your own personal goal. And as I said, those are just examples of things that we can do. So CEO's report, so Margie.
Can you give me share capability? There you go. Right, I'm going to go ahead and start with the policy. So I sent it out, and then there's a couple of revisions. I did highlight that in red. One of the conversations I wanted to be able to have was every Thursday we have the charter leader meeting, and I really wanted to be able to sort of bounce some questions off of the other leaders. And so we always have really good discussions. And so a couple of things that bubbled up is some of the leaders had made some minor edits to the template. So we were sharing those ideas. So this is in red. The reason for specifically putting this in here is that we want it to be noted that the OMB has already looked at this template. So keep in mind that what we did is the charter network through Kendall contracted Jim Taylor, our attorney, to draft this template of the policy, because unfortunately the state came out with, sort of an announcement that there was going to be this leave policy but really did not give any more details. So it really created more questions than answers. And so then they said, you know, when they got bombarded with all the questions, they said, okay, well, now we're going to put it together an FAQ. And so the FAQ was taking a week, week and a half. It just came out yesterday. So it came out 2 weeks after the announcement. And so we were getting anxious because we wanted to be able to go to our teams and to our communities and be able to say, this is the way the policy is going to work. So fortunately, Jim was able to go ahead and draft the template for us, and we had it actually reviewed and approved by OMB. So they were fine with the content of this template. So that's the only addition there to the statement of purpose. And then when you get to the policy section, number one says the employee tests positive for COVID-19 and is required to quarantine. These are the different situations or the reasons why an employee would be eligible to take these additional days. And just to give you some more context, I mean, remember that when we were under a state of emergency, that from the federal government to then the state government, employees were given additional days for quarantine situations so that they would not have to exhaust their sick leave and be in a situation of no pay in situations where they had to quarantine or got infected and were dealing with the virus. So, but after the state emergency ended, which was July, that policy then was no longer in effect. However, the governor has decided now to implement this piece of it and is now providing employees with this additional 10 days of leave between July 1st of 21. So it goes back, it retros back to when that the policy expired all the way through the end of the calendar year. So it's only through December of 21. Whether it gets extended or not, we don't know. But for now, it's only going through December. And then it outlines the specific reasons why an employee would be eligible to be able to use these days. So for number one, we wanted to be able to add that that the employee tests positive and is required to quarantine. And then all the other reasons behind that, all of those are the same. I didn't change any of that. And the only other change I made was adding Karen's name to the procedures. Because although most of us know who our HR director is, we do have quite a few new people. So, and then in this document, which is the actual leave request form, so an employee will have to complete this form and provide the necessary documentation and submit it to HR in order for them to be eligible for those days. And so on this document, this is where we had a really good conversation in the charter leader meeting today, and resulted in this additional language being put in. This is one of the qualifying reasons that gives a lot of us some concern, because we want to be sure that this is not treated as just 10 additional sick days that you can just use for anything, right? So we want to be sure that it's specifically for COVID-related situations. So what we added here is that you must attach documentation of your appointment for the COVID testing and the results. But also that please note that a negative result may require use of your unused sick time as opposed to the COVID leave, depending on individual circumstances. We felt it was really important that we have some discretion in this process to make sure that it's being used for the benefit of protecting everybody and not being used for just additional time off. And so keep in mind that as state employees, everyone gets 10 sick days every year. If you don't use your sick days, they roll over, they don't expire. And actually when you retire from the state, you get compensated for all those unused sick days. We wanna be sure that we don't have situations where people are choosing to use the COVID days when it wasn't really warranted as a COVID episode or a COVID incident. And instead they should be using their sick time. So that additional verbiage was added. Any questions?
Margie, not a question to the policy, but and the only reason why I know this is because my wife works for the state too. She works with the Justice Department. So is this a separate policy from, I think it's like if you get COVID, you get 14 days from the state. Is this separate from that policy? Because or is this something completely different? Like, this is what we will do regardless of what the state has already said could happen. Cause she would get 14 days if she was to get COVID. No, doesn't have to use sick leave or anything like that. It sounds like this is a separate policy.
This is the state policy. So I'm not familiar with the 14 days.
Okay. Well, Louise, 10 days.
That may have been last year. Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay.
It's the 10 days. Basically, it's 2 weeks if you include the weekends, right? But it's 10 business days.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then we're good. That's where I got confused, because I've heard her say it 14 days.
Yeah.
And then I was like, this is 10 days. There's a disconnect. So I think we're good.
Margie, one question. So if people do have COVID and they need more than 10 days off, then they have to just use their regular sick time?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is in addition to the regular 10 sick days.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I can tell you, I had a real bad case of COVID and 10 days wouldn't have cut it. So, I mean, I didn't take that much time off, but I got to work from home. Like if I had to go in to work, 10 days would not have been enough.
Yeah. Yeah. This is really to be that safety net so that, you know, we hope that people don't get into a situation where they're in a no pay status because they don't have the days to cover. So this 10 additional days, that's the intent behind it. Any other questions?
I do. When you're adding that, if they have a negative result, unused of their own sick time may be used. I'm a little iffy on that, because if we have symptoms, we're not supposed to show up to work to keep everyone safe.
Mm-hmm.
So this might push people to go in, you know, when they might be symptomatic. Because what if it isn't? It's just a cold, you're not sure. And I don't want to lose my sick time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why we specifically
I don't think people would take advantage. I want to think of the goodness of humanity here. I'm going to just take the day off. Yeah. But
you cut in a little
depending
bit
on
in
and out, Anna. Circumstances,
but yeah.
It's at the discretion of Miss Karen then afterwards. I don't know.
Anna,
discretion would be on to determine the individual circumstances.
You're cutting in and out, but I think I understand what your question is. So Anna, what you may want to do is turn off your video.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I was just wondering at the discretion.
Anna, what you may want to do is turn off your video.
Is this better? I was just wondering, depending on individual circumstances, whose discretion is that?
HR director.
No.
The HR director. Because you're right. I mean, that was part of our discussion, is that we don't want to discourage people from doing the right thing as far as staying home if they feel they have symptoms. But we do want to at least consider individual circumstances where maybe, it's something that if we start seeing a pattern where, the illness is not related to COVID whatsoever, but yet, you know, we're exhausting that leave time. So we want to be sure that people are doing the right thing and therefore they're using the right bank of days. The COVID bank of days should not be used simply because, you know, you've got the sniffles. You've got 10 other sick days for that. So either way, the whole point is to make sure is to avoid the situation where an employee is in a no pay status, for illnesses. And so we feel that this is the best approach so that whether they use their sick days or whether they use the COVID days, we want to be sure that it's we're using the appropriate bank of days. Any other questions? Anna, did I answer that? I don't know.
Any other comments or questions? Because we need a motion to approve the policy as presented and discussed.
Margie, I have a question because I feel like it may come up.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry if you can't hear me. Amaya's tablet is very loud. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I see multiple qualifying reasons, but let's say an employee, God forbid, tests positive for COVID in October. And then come November, qualifying reason number four, their child's school is closed due to a COVID outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
So would they be able to use this policy twice or would they then have to go into their PTO?
Yeah, that's a good question. So it's not, last time it was a one incident type of situation, one occurrence. It's not a one occurrence. You have the 10 days so that in your example, you would still be okay because you would still qualify for two different qualifying reasons and you would still be able to tap into those days. Mm-hmm. Good question.
Thank you for the clarification.
Anything else? Do I have a motion to approve?
I had one more question, sorry. And this may not be relevant because I don't know if there's like mandatory, I know that the state is requiring people to be vaccinated, but I don't know what the progress, side effects related to vaccination, does that count towards this or no? Like, I know a lot of people here have taken off a couple of days if they got vaccinated on like a Monday and they were knocked out for 2 days. I didn't see that was an included thing. And I don't know if that's, I'm hopeful that many people are already so many people are already vaccinated that it's not an issue. But with booster shots coming out, I know people who have gotten booster shots and they were sick again for 24 or 48 hours.
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah, it's not currently covered under any of the qualifying reasons. But once again, they have their 10 sick days that would still cover them. So ultimately, the objective is being met, which is not to put a state employee in a situation where they're in a no pay status. So yeah, you're right. I mean, this whole policy has gone through a lot of different discussion. There was even discussion about disqualifying people who were not vaccinated, right? Because to make that sort of a motivator, if you're not vaccinated, then you basically are choosing to put yourself in this predicament. So, it has, after going through different iterations, at least that is no longer like a disqualifier. But the situation that you speak of, like side effects to the vaccine, which could possibly affect you for 1 or 2 days, you're covered under your regular sick time. You know what? I just realized I'm not plugged in, and my laptop is going to die. So I'm just going to step away for a second to get my charger. Hold on.
Well, there's no other questions, though. We can go move ahead with approval. Do I have a motion to approve the temporary COVID policy, leave policy?
Motion to approve the COVID policy, Roland Dow.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Guillermina. All those in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. So Margie, the policy has been approved by the board and we can then move forward with your report.
You're on mute, Margie.
So starting with enrollment goal, Greg had mentioned that we're on track with enrollment. here's the breakdown of our face-to-face students versus our scholars, which we mentioned earlier. Those are our eighth graders that are currently over at the high school. And then we have 57 AVA students. So we're pacing to be at about 102%. Remember that, you know, September 30th is the date where sort of the enrollment is locked down. So we feel pretty confident that's where we're going to land, is 102, which is good. And as far as the safe return to school, Greg touched a little bit on this, but just letting you know that, you know, we are really proud of how things have been going with the reopening of the school. Everyone has been compliant with the face mask. I think everybody sort of appreciates being back in person, students, you know, the teachers, the whole team, the families. So it's been great to see that everybody's adjusted to that. COVID testing started last week. So we did not do it the first week of school. We waited until the second week. And I will tell you that now that we've completed the second week of testing, definitely has gotten better every day. We are so much more efficient today than we were on the first day. You know, a couple of really positive things is the nurses that the state has contracted with to really support this whole process. They're amazing individuals. They come from all over the country, but it's a great group of people. They're very friendly. They're great with the students. They're very gentle and especially with the kindergartners and the first graders, they're very good about making sure that they make it an easy process. And we've also had team members dedicated to the process as well. So we've been able to get everyone tested that we have permission for. We have about 30 students that as of yesterday, we were still following up with the families on the permission forms. The permission form is definitely a tedious process. That's one of the feedback, some of the feedback that we gave back to Quidel and to the state. It's a multi-step process. And it was funny today on the charter call, Kendall herself, who now has a child in a charter school, said that she actually went through and thought she completed the permission, but then found out that she missed the step. So it is, you know, it's like four different steps involved in actually getting to the point where Quidel gets the notification that you've given permission for your child to be tested. So we do have some families that are confused by that process. As of today, it seems like we are on track to have everybody taken care of. And the process is very easy. You can either choose for the nurse to actually swab your nose, and it is not the nose swab where they basically are going up to your brain. It's a very gentle process. You can choose to do it yourself or the nurse can do it for you. And you actually get the results in less than an hour. I went ahead and got tested myself because I wanted to sort of experience the process. And, you know, we're encouraging even those that are vaccinated to get tested. It's right there. They're there every day in our school building because we decided we chose to become a hub for the state. So they're there on the premises every single day. So people have definitely been taking advantage of that. I think it really helps to give peace of mind. So we've had some positive cases and those notifications have gone out, but fortunately, because of the other protocols and the other levels of caution that we're taking with the face mask, we've been able to continue to move forward with face-to-face learning without any interruption. So we're hopeful that we're gonna be able to continue to do that. We already talked about the leave policy. And then some other quick, you know, just updates. As Marissa mentioned, we were really torn about having to cancel the Hispanic Heritage Month. Lynn and Lilia had put a lot of work into planning it. But when it came down to it, it was sort of too much of unknowns, right? We're hopeful that we're going to be able to still have our other school functions, because the other school functions we have more control over. Like Marissa mentioned, like when we have a concert, we can decide how many tickets we sell. And we even have our tickets, our seats are numbered, right? So we can actually decide whether we want to alternate rows, if we want to do more physical distancing, we can control all of that. Where in a festival like we have with the Hispanic Heritage Celebration, it really is like an open street fair. We don't know who's coming. There's no way to keep track of who's vaccinated and not vaccinated. It's hard to then enforce face mask and physical distancing. And that was the thing that was getting us concerned, was that there were just too many unknowns. But we are moving forward with other events aside from the concerts, also looking at having a school dance or a school event for students in October. And that would be for the middle school students as well as the high school students, two separate events. So the team is working on plans to make that happen. And then we are going to be starting up with auditions for the school musical. So we are planning to have that as well. That will actually, they will perform in February. So, you know, I think as sad as we were to not have the Hispanic Heritage Celebration, we do feel that it was the right decision. And then we have October team building event. The day before we have the PD day, which is October 8th. We're going to be taking the team out and having a nice outdoor event to help the team sort of get to know each other. I mean, I know that all of you can know that your best work experiences are work experiences where you actually connect with one another. You get to know each other on a personal level, not just within the school, the workplace. So with COVID, it's, you know, we have not had the opportunity to really connect. A lot of new people have joined us over the past 18 months. So this is a great opportunity for us to really get to socialize with one another. And it's great that we're doing it in early October, so we're going to be able to do it outdoors. And then we have the state PD. As you guys know, when we had our strategic planning session, there was feedback from the survey about PD. So I wanted to just share that with you, that on October 8th, it's a statewide PD day, and the state is sponsoring an equity summit, but then they have a whole menu of workshops that are going to be going on. So the team was given the opportunity to sort of sign up for what they were interested in. So there was a lot of choice in that day of professional development. We've started with our multi-tiered system of support, MTSS, and that is the program that the state is implementing in place of RTI, which was response to intervention and only focus on the academic intervention. MTSS is more of a whole child approach. So we're looking at not just the academics, but also the social emotional needs of students. So we have a benchmark assessment tool that we use. We'll be completing that. Well, we completed that this week. And then we'll be having meetings with the teams next week. And then we actually start instruction October 11th, which means that there's specifically small group workshops, small group sessions that are conducted based on the assessment information that we get as far as like areas that the student needs some support in. In the West Campus, we did the NWEA assessments. And just as a reminder, that was actually a condition of the grant that we received from New Schools, the expansion grant. So one of the things that, you know, our national funders want to know with all the schools in their portfolio is, how are you guys doing compared to the other schools in our portfolio? You know, so they always want to be able to have a common benchmark tool, assessment tool, so that they can actually compare apples to apples. So that was an assessment that we had to conduct. So Debbie was able to coordinate that this week. PSATs will happen on October 14th. Things are really great. Like Lourdes said, you know, we were at the high school and the kids are happy to be in the school. It is nice. You know, it was funny last year, we went hybrid. About 50% of the kids came in face to face, but it was very quiet. I think we had the quietest cafeteria ever for a high school, but it was because the kids were still very much, you know, like they didn't know each other and they weren't comfortable with one another. And now it's a very different environment. They're laughing, they're socializing. We were able to kick off clubs at the West Campus. So as you can see, lots of different activities going on. So the students have lots of things that they could choose to get involved in. And then they're also going to be hosting the high school hangout, which is going to be, actually it's tonight. So it is going on right now. And it's outdoors. So they were going to have snacks and refreshments for the kids and just an opportunity for them to socialize. So once again, looking at things like, you know, we may not be having a homecoming dance or things like that, but finding opportunities for the kids to still be able to socialize outside of the school day. And then also giving you some athletic updates. I asked our ADs to give us some information and actually give you schedules. If you're in the area of any of these schools on these days, it'd be great for you to show up to support the team. The girls volleyball team, they won their first game in high school history. So because we didn't play last year. So that was neat that we have a win against Brandywine High School. Unfortunately, we lost to Appaquinimic. And you know, funny thing about that Appaquinimic game, to talk about this whole thing about the shortage of bus drivers, that game was supposed to be at home. And I went over because I was looking forward to seeing it. And I go into the gym at our school and it's empty. And I'm texting the AD, come to find out Appaquinimic did not have enough buses or bus drivers to transport the girls to our school to play at our school. So because fortunately we have a great bus company and our own PE teacher, PE health teacher, Mr. Freeth, actually got his license. He actually drives our sports bus. We were able to transport our girls down there to play the game down there. Unfortunately, they lost, but you know, they definitely are learning after with each game. Then we have the boys soccer playing, and then we have middle school sports. So just giving you the information. So if you have the opportunity to come out, and that is my report. And this is all on Board on Track if you haven't checked yet. Any questions? Cool. I'm out, as Marissa said.
Yeah. So board members, I really very much appreciate if we could stay on. I think Greg, the way we're gonna do this is you give me host, and then I guess I can text you if we're gonna come back to public session to do vote from the personnel discussion. And we'll Margie, we'll release you for the rest of the night. So Greg, my apologies, because I know that it looks like no. You're still at the school.
That's okay. I live here. All good.
No, but we don't.
Another day.
We don't necessarily want that. So let's get a motion to move to executive session again, and we expect to come back. And so, can I get a motion to move to executive session?
Motion to move to executive session, Santiago.
Do I have a sec? Thank you, Santiago. Do I have a second?
Second, Gonzalez.
Thank you. All those in favor say aye. And so let's go ahead and stop the recording for now. Okay, perfect. Thank you. So do I have a motion to return to public session?
Motion to return to public session, Terra Nova Thistle.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
Second, Rolone Dow.
Thank you. So we're back on the public session, and we just need to a vote from the personal discussions from the executive session. Guillermina, please.
A motion to approve what was discussed during the executive session.
Do I have a second?
Second, Santiago.
Thank you. All those in favor? Aye. Any opposition? Okay, excellent. Thank you, everybody. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn, Santiago.
Second, Gonzalez.
Do I have a second? Thank you, everybody. Have a good evening.
See you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.